Now the fun begins.
Bridget.
Stop! You violated the law.
Welcome back to another episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. Wherever you get a podcast at, be sure to subscribe to us in general. Rate us, review us, all that jazz. Every week I run through the whole thing. Just fucking do it. The less you got to hear me talk about it. Wherever you get a podcast app, follow us on there. And if we're not on a platform that you like or you use, let me know. I'll get us on there. It'll be a lot easier for everyone involved. You listen to us. You know, we give you the content. It's bada bing, bada boom, whatever, man. You know, just fugazi stuff, you know. Right, Mike?
Content kings.
Content yes, kings. That's right. Yeah. Fuck Tarek, man. We are the kings of content. I don't want to hear it from him.
That's right.
And of course, follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast. Stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games alike, and our dope giveaways. I'm your host, as always, Travis White, aka Travelist, on most internet platforms. Joining me, as always, my partner in crime, Mike PPAC. Mike, what's good? What's going on? I obviously want to hear what you've been playing, like we do every week. But I just want to give a shout out to you for just really manning through the past like fucking week. Mike's had no AC for like a week, and we're right getting into the midst of summer here. Summer's getting kicked off, and he lives in Virginia, which is fucking muggy as shit. So just a pat on the back to Mike for really dealing with these first world problems that we all now deal with, but for really just pushing through on that. Because you even played games with us one night when it was like 85 degrees in your house. So
I mean, it's been that way. I've just been kind of getting through it, and I know some of the international listeners might be rolling your eyes because I realize that like you guys don't have air conditioning, but that's not my fucking fault. Okay, I can't help it. Yeah, I'm sure if you could have it, you would.
Yeah. They're like, oh, these fucking idiots. These fucking dumbass. First,
them Americans.
First, they can't get their shit together with weapons. Second, they can't get their shit together with anything that involves the fucking financial system of the world. And now they're just out here bitching about air conditioning. Oh, poor us. Air conditioning.
Literally. Fuck. There's a lot worse. You know, there's a lot worse situations that could have been happening. But no, I mean, for me, that's probably like, I would rather probably go to bed hungry every night than, you know, go to bed uncomfortable as far as temperatures. And I realize, you know, it's complete and total first world problems. And again, like owning a home and dealing with that kind of bullshit is 100% like, it's definitely a luxury to own a home. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of negatives with it, but there's also a lot of positives. So I realized how lucky and fortunate I am. But God damn, it was really frustrating not having air conditioning.
Dude, and I'm right there with you because our AC, now granted, we rent a townhouse. So like, it's a little different. I could just call up somebody and be like, hey, come fix this. This is part of the fucking deal kind of thing.
Yeah.
But obviously, I'd much prefer to eventually in the near future, like own property. But like, dude, nothing beats that feeling of when your AC goes out, but that first just kick of cold air that comes back. Like, yeah. it's almost like that's what I imagine what chewing five gum feel like, tastes like and feels like. Like that air, because once it's gone, like you don't realize how good AC is. Like you just think like most places have it now. Like most modern buildings, houses, everything like that have central air built into it. Like it's there. Like people just don't think about it now. But unless you live in like, especially unless you live in areas like we do, where it's like when it gets hot, it's not a dry heat. It's just fucking muggy. It's just like humid and gross and just everyone's fucking miserable. You fucking lose 10 pounds just walking to like the mailbox and back. Like it's gross. It's
You can't even do any like house chores because I just sit there and sweat the entire time. And then for me, it was like even if I would open the window at night. So like say it got down to like 74 at night in freedom degrees. Like it would be like
90% humidity, so I would just sit there and just be fucking soaking wet because it's just miserable out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just there's a lot of other things I would prefer to have happen to my house than the AC go out. But nevertheless, again, I gritted my teeth. I got really gritty. You know, the hockey world loves their fucking grit. Like, so much fucking grit. Fucking need that grit on the defensive. Need that fucking grit. I need Sunken Keith, who gets sunken in the defensive zone because he brings that fucking grit, baby. Who cares if he's 36% CF percentage? Fucking need that grit, baby. Like,
the league needs more people like Tom Wilson. We don't have enough people like Tom Wilson, let me tell you.
Like, I definitely got through it, and I'm just, like, the air conditioning being on, like you said, is just, it's heavenly right now. It feels so good to be in my basement, just air, cold air just coming and caressing my body, and it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, that's the goal, especially too. Like, we both grew up, did you have AC at your house?
Yes.
Okay, see, I grew up in a house, like, where my dad was like, no, we're not getting AC. Like, granted, if it got really hot, he had, like, an AC. Like, my parents had an AC in their room because...
Yeah, in their room?
Well, listen. There's a reason for that. And I give my dad credit for that. Like, I understand. Like, my dad worked nights, so he slept during the day. So when it's, like, balls hot out, like, and you're trying he's to sleeping. Sleep. Yeah, so that I get. Like, he's the fucking breadwinner. He's making sure I can fucking afford to fucking eat. Like, all right, you could have one there. Like, that's fine. But because of like, we put an addition on our house, and my dad was, love him to death, obviously, but is very much, I'm a son of his own, like, nature, definitely, because he wanted to kind of do it himself, kind of piecemeal it, like, that sounds bad, but, like, take it at his stride and do it himself, obviously, just because, you know, we weren't fucking rich or anything, we can only afford what we can pay for at a time, so, like, our house would be getting, like, work done on it and things like that. And, like, I get it. He wouldn't want to pay for AC if, like, for 2 weeks or whatever, we got a fucking hole in our, you know, our old living room or our basement and stuff. And air's just, we're just fucking burning money kind of thing. Like, I get it. Yeah, that makes sense. But, like, once it made me appreciate so much, though, like, once I got to, like, college and fucking like grad school, especially when I got to grad school and, like, Zach and I had our own, like, it was like a legitimate, like, not like student housing townhouse kind of thing that we rented, and it had central air, not just like fucking like AC unit in the wall. That's when I was like, okay, like, no matter what in life, I don't care how much extra it is or whatever we got to pay in the electricity bill, I will have AC. Like, mm-hmm. And granted, Molly will kick my ass if she hears me saying that, because I joke, like, yeah, in like 10 years when we have kids, like, when my kids will never know the struggle of not having air conditioning growing up, like, especially if we're in this fucking area of the country, like, they will know, they will understand what the pleasure and the joy of having air conditioning is. I will make sure I do whatever to put air conditioning on their plate to eat, baby, like, fucking A. But yeah, that's 10 minutes of air conditioning talk to start the show. But anyways, Mike, let's get to the nitty-gritty. What have you been playing this past week? I know you've been checking out Halo Infinite a little bit, which I don't want to say shocking, but
I've been what?
You weren't
supposed to tell anyone.
Yeah, like that's the side chat. Like, hey man, you know, keep that on the down low, you know? You can't let anybody know about that.
Literally. But I've been playing some Halo Infinite, just, you know, kind of checking out, partially, like, doing the new update, but also I feel like, you know, when it first came out, I was taking competing in it pretty serious. I was spending a lot of time on it, and I definitely had some burnout, but there was also a lot of things that was done by 343 that definitely deserved, you know, people to turn their back, at least for the time being, because it's one of those things where it's like, okay, if you're going to make the game good, at some point, players will come back.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not going to put any time or effort into it, why should we? And, you know, for all intents and purposes, some of the stuff that they've added is really good. Some of the stuff they added is just typical 343 patheticness. The Team Snipers playlist being absolutely garbage is just, you know, it's it's one of those things where them as a studio, it just feels like they want to just be, like, cool and, like, change things up because they can. And it's like, bro, It's like Jerry Krause with the fucking 96 Bulls, or with the 98 Bulls. Like, dude, fuck off and let that team stay together. Like, nobody gives a fuck that you want to have your own thumbprint on it. Like, let them stay together for one last year and go for it. But no, in typical, you know, Jerry Krause fashion, have to just fucking change it up, have to be fucking cool. And that's just 343. Like, how you fuck up Sniper's playlist by having the wrong weapons and stuff is just so beyond me. I don't understand how that decision is made. But nevertheless, just been enjoying, you know, considering dabbling again in competition. We'll never, you know, take it super serious again. But like anything I do with something like that, I do have to take it at some level, you know, somewhat serious. So just been enjoying that. Playing a little bit of D2 Resurrected still. Genuinely still enjoying my time with that game. You know, the only thing I can really say about Diablo 2 Resurrected is I saw some gameplay and heard some comments about the new Diablo, whatever the fuck they're calling it. Basically, the mobile bullshit.
Oh, Diablo Immortal, the like free to play. Yeah. I think it's come to PC too, if I remember correctly.
It did come out to PC today.
But mainly mobile is the audience they're targeting with that. Yes. Yeah.
And basically, it came out today, and I watched some people play it. I didn't play it myself, but I watched a couple of like Diablo streamers play it. I'm not that impressed with it. It's typical mobile game, it seems like, with the pay-to-win bullshit. So I'll definitely be skipping out on that. The only thing I can really say about Diablo 2 Resurrected, I just pray that they keep Vicarious Visions on and they let Vicarious Visions do, you know, whatever they want to do with the game, basically, because for a long time now, I know Diablo fans feel this way, and for good reason, but, like, it just feels like Blizzard doesn't really, unless it's WoW, they don't really care about, like, innovation and change and making the game, like, different or better. And I get it. Like, WoW's been their cash cow for a super long time. But there's still a lot of Diablo fans out there that are disappointed by that, and rightfully so. So I just hope that, you know, they keep Vicarious Visions around and let them, you know, kind of get out of the way and let Vicarious Visions go. And hopefully, like, with Halo, or with Halo, with Microsoft coming into the fold, hopefully, you know, Microsoft kind of lets Vicarious Visions do their thing and maybe even provides a little bit more support and pushes Blizzard to push the boundaries on Diablo 2, because it kind of reminds me, it's not obviously not the same because the games are very different, but like it's kind of similar to me as like Age of Empires 2, where it's like you kind of the Microsoft support that game so much, and it's 20 years old and they're still, you know, producing original content to it. There's still a pretty reasonable player base out there for it. And I hope that they kind of let Vicarious Visions do that, because quite frankly, you know, whatever your feelings are on Diablo 3, they could be good, they could be bad, whatever they are. There's a whole conglomerate of like Diablo 2 fans that basically made the jump to Path of Exile specifically because it was as close to Diablo 2 as they could get.
Yeah.
And I just hope that, like, I don't even know that Diablo 2 fans really care if Diablo 4 is anything like Diablo 2. In fact, they probably, I know I speak for myself, I don't really care. I'll play Diablo 2 probably for the rest of my life. Like, I will always go back to this game because I just love it that much. I just hope they let Vicarious Visions do whatever they want to do, spend whatever resources they want to spend, and make this game as good as it really can be, because I know it still has more to go. And you know, I know I may speak for myself, but I could, you know, really spend the rest of my life with Diablo 2, and I hope that it gets more content in any way, shape, or form, even if it's something as simple as like Age of Empires 2, just getting a few new civilizations here and there with new campaigns. Like, that's all that matters to me. Yeah, they brought Age of Empires 4 out, but they still support Age of Empires 2 because they have a different studio, and that's awesome to me. And I hope that Microsoft brings that type of energy to Diablo 2 with Blizzard and with Vicarious Visions and kind of lets them do their own thing.
No, definitely. And that's what, and we're going to kind of, as obviously you're probably seeing by the title of the show, we'll kind of get into looking at the lay of the land for Microsoft here in a little bit. But now that this is kind of included in that, it's interesting you bring that up, because like even looking like since their merger, since Vicarious Visions, if I could talk, being kind of brought in and pretty much being engulfed by Blizzard as just a Blizzard studio now to an extent, you know, it really, and seeing the success obviously that Diablo 2 Resurrect is having and the success it continues to have and the popularity and whatnot, like, to me, that was such a prime, like, I hope it is one of those things that eventually is going to pay off where this Blizzard entity, and hopefully now being under Microsoft, we know how forward thinking Phil has been with in terms of putting, hey, we're putting games first. That's first and foremost everything we do, and really doing a lot of partnerships and obviously now acquisitions with, you know, these fucking tentpole companies like Activision, Blizzard, Bethesda, yada yada, that really are, you see so many of these player first moves that they've been kind of focusing a lot of the things around, that you hope with the, you know, noise that Diablo 2 Resurrected brought up and continues to bring up, that since their kind of acquisition and, or since Vicarious Visions merger into Blizzard as just pretty much a support studio, that if they're running independently as a Blizzard studio, like they're, you know, the team wasn't disbanded or anything, and those, you know, team members weren't offered positions at other, you know, development studios within Blizzard or, you know, yada yada, but hopefully that they are just rebranded as a Blizzard studio, that, you know, we know Blizzard has stuff in the works, like, that hopefully this is a good kind of, like, I don't want to say galaxy brain thing, that this pays off more in the end than we think it is, that you look at it, you know, 5 years down the road, and we're at the newest iteration of E3, and we're seeing them at Xbox's showcase, you know, say that, you know, us finding out that, hey, the next whatever, then, you know, this new survival game that we know Blizzard's working on, and they have another unannounced project, like, whatever that is, that we see what was Vicarious Visions kind of leading the charge on that, where we've seen them have such success with the Tony Hawk remaster. We've seen them have huge success, or I should say remake. We've seen them have such huge success with Diablo 2 Resurrected. Like, clearly this is, you know, even if it is like, hey, they're handling now, we want to make sure that Warcraft still has a foothold in, you know, RTS or StarCraft, whatever. Like, we want to make sure they have a, you know, a hold in that still, that, you know, why don't we give that to them to handle? Why don't they make Warcraft 4 or whatever it would be, StarCraft 3, like, whatever.
Or how will they fix Warcraft 3 remaster?
Right, exactly. Yeah, something like that, that they're kind of overseeing that, and they kind of get the footing that they probably deserve, and what us on the outside, not being, you know, employees at Vicarious Visions or Blizzard, who are making those decisions, that to us on the outside looking in looks like, hey, they just want to cut back on cost in terms of they're not making, you know, additional, you know, they don't want to focus on new IPs or anything, like, they're focused on live services and yada yada, like, we want studios doing that, that's why we're moving them into Blizzard to as a support role, yada yada. Hopefully that's not the case of what this is, you know, long term, and we see them kind of get a stranglehold over some kind of project that they can call their own, because they've just fucking knocked it out of the park back to back with what they've done. Like, let them be, almost, I would like to say, even in a sense, let them be what Bluepoint is to Sony, where Bluepoint for a long time, a second-party studio, really, with PlayStation, that they pretty much exclusively just did projects with PlayStation, namely in the past decade, we're talking the Uncharted Nathan Drake collection. They did the remasters of those. They did the remake of Shadow of the Colossus, and then most recently they did the remake of Demon's Souls, where all three of those projects have put out rave reviews, especially the last two, and specifically Demon's Souls, that they're now viewed as, hey, this is the remake company, or the remake developer. This is the, hey, or really even potentially reboot of, like, hey, you want a fresh start with this IP, or you want to bring this IP back and in a meaningful way, we're giving them this project to work to. Like, people keep talking, the rumored, you know, hey, they're working on the a remake of Metal Gear Solid. Like, stuff like that, that, you know, that would be fantastic to see something like them be that for Microsoft. Where, hey, not that I'm saying we need to fucking do this, but I'm just pulling a random IP from Microsoft's history in my past. Fucking Brute Force or fucking Fusion Frenzy or something like that. Like, you want to bring an IP back from, you know, years past and freshen it up, new coat of paint, even a remake, like, to, you know, test the waters and see if this IP still has some weight that everyone seems to think. Almost like a Perfect Dark. Like, that would have been a great IP to bring back. Banjo-Kazooie, something like that that they have in their arsenal that seems like the studio to do it. So, I'm with you. Hopefully they get their, I don't want to say comeuppance, but, like, I hope that now with this acquisition by Microsoft, they're able to retool that decision to bring them in or them to merge into Blizzard, that they can now hopefully retool that to still give them the weight that they probably deserve in terms of leaving their footprint on whatever Xbox does. Long-winded, but I basically me saying, yeah, I agree with you.
I do want to say that, like, I feel like it is somewhat of a thankless job, because I look at certain studios, whether it be Epic with Gears of War. Now, their campaign was always, you know, a critical hit and a critical success, and for good reason. They've always made really quality campaigns, in my opinion. But I look at a studio like 343, and I know they're like the punching bag for me, but, like, there's other studios, like all the Call of Duties, like, it's a thankless job to just reinvent the wheel, if you will, or not necessarily reinvent the wheel. That's, you know, what a lot of studios are doing. It's a thankless job to just take something that, you know, has been legendary or, you know, has a huge fan base and just, you know, take it in your own hands and work on it, expand on it, try to make it better if possible. It's a super thankless job, in my opinion, because a lot of studios, Bungie included, have always looked like, hey, we're ready to move on from making this one game. And maybe because they're always redoing something a little different, maybe it keeps it somewhat fresh. But I do want to, you know, just give them a shout out to say, like, hey, I know that it's probably tiring to just do remakes all the time, but you're doing a huge service to the fans of the games that you're touching, and I hope that you never get bored and you want to keep doing that, and you don't ever, like, not that you don't ever get your chance to make your own standalone game, but I hope that the work is fulfilling and that your studio enjoys the work that you do, because there are a lot of fans like me who are endlessly enjoying the work that you have put into it. So please, I hope that you continue to have enjoyment, you continue to remake or remaster games, because I've loved pretty much everything you've touched so far.
Right, 100%. Couldn't agree more. On my end, just things I've been kind of playing, for some reason, I don't value my time much, I guess. I started a replay of Skyrim. Everyone knows I've been doing the, you know, hey, we're running through, I'm running through the, you know, Bethesda Game Studios replay of their catalog that I do every, you know, every couple of years. Oblivion's almost every year that I run through just because it's one of my favorite games of all time. But wrapped up Fallout 3 a couple months, or maybe about a month or so back, wrapped up a hefty replay of Fallout 4, and now going into what appears to be probably a hefty replay of Skyrim. I'm saving Oblivion for last now that, because I want to stream that again. Doing an Oblivion playthrough the first time on stream, not the first time I played it, obviously, but my first Oblivion playthrough on stream that I did was one of my favorite streams I've ever done. So I'd like to do that again, but I want to wait closer to Starfield to do that. So originally that was going to be a lot sooner, but now, obviously, as we know, I'm going to wait probably closer to maybe Christmas or so to do that, but
let that baby bake a little bit.
Right, longer. Right. So, and it's going to be 100% playthrough, like I did last summer, that every now, normally if I want to just run through it, I'll do, you know, maybe about a nice 50% chunk or something. I hit all, do the, I don't take the scenic route, where now I'm kind of doing this right now with Bethesda's catalog again that I haven't done in a long time. Like, and really with Skyrim too, like, that game is so, in comparison, I think, to so many of their other games, and I even think much more than Fallout 4, because I've found a lot more love for Fallout 4 as the years gone on and more playthroughs I do of that, that I think Skyrim is by far their most linear experience. That is very much a game, and very much so how it's designed, because of, and you see how popular that game has been for them and what really, you know, a lot of people say skyrocketed them into mainstream fame. But there's a reason for that, because more people were able to experience it because it having such a linear path that you can go on. Like, if you want to, realistically, like all Elder Scrolls games, you could realistically, for the most part, do the main quest line and only have to do a few side things. Where Skyrim very much is like, if you want to play this as a linear experience, that's great. You can do it. This, I'm starting to get more of an appreciation for this game, and I still have much, it's my Bethesda game I have the most qualms with, obviously, but I'm starting to get more of an appreciation for it because I'm forcing this game, I'm pushing back on this game a little bit, where I'm going through and I'm wanting to explore. I still don't think that, I think Fallout 4 does a much better job, and granted, it's the game after this one, so obviously they're taking everything that they learned from Skyrim and the player feedback that they got, obviously, and put it into the next game, just like hopefully what they've done with Fallout 4 going into Starfield. That I feel like exploration definitely isn't as rewarded and encouraged as much, or that encouragement isn't rewarded as much as it was in Fallout 4, where I'm not necessarily getting experience, I'm not building up my character, I'm not, you know, the risk reward sometimes always isn't worth it going through some of the dungeons and things like that, that I think really kind of got overshadowed by the issues that people had with Fallout 4, where I thought Fallout 4 had such a good improvement over that. But I'm still finding more of an appreciation playing this game and forcing it to be played in a way that it almost at times doesn't want to be played, where I am kind of sticking to, hey, I want to play through this and commit to a build. Where how Skyrim compared to Oblivion, especially Morrowind, where you can pretty much, your attributes are very fluid in this game, where if you want, you could be an expert in fucking everything. Like, you're not tied to a specific skill set. Like, it is very open-ended in that regard, where if I want to be somebody who, you know, if I'm playing and I'm going through and playing the main quest line, by the time I get to the DLC and I focused on, you know, I was a light armor build, fuck it. You know what? I want to do heavy armor. I could just fucking do that. I don't have to worry about anything else. I don't have to change anything else. I could just focus on doing heavy armor and build that up and focus on ways to kind of train that. So compared to, obviously, Oblivion and especially Morrowind, where it was much more like, hey, you're choosing specific builds to play, or you're focusing in on certain things. And when I do that and play it more as a traditional RPG and an RPG of yesteryear, I'm finding more reward with that because I'm challenging myself to really attack certain situations in certain ways, where I'm playing as, this time around, I'm focusing heavily on sneak, lockpicking, and archery, where, like, I am focused on basically being not an assassin, but almost like a stealth Legolas, like, where I want to be an expert at anything that is with bows and the ability to go in and basically be unseen. Like, basically, like, I'm playing Dishonored. I'm playing like that. And it's been really rewarding to kind of go through and beef up this build that I have. And even though I'm not getting experience, I'm forcing this game to play a different way than it has traditionally been played. And I think more people would come around to this game a little bit more if they did that. But then again, fans of the series, longtime fans of the series, don't necessarily want that. They want to have that ability without having to push back a lot. Like, if they just want to play that way, they can play that way. Like, it just shouldn't be like that. But that's mostly what I've been playing by myself. Molly and I wrapped up our Firewatch, my Firewatch replay, her first time playing it. She really liked it. It just makes me really wish that hopefully Valve, who now owns Campos Santos, and supposedly they put Campos Santos is originally what their next game they were working on in the Valley of Gods, that was revealed in 2017. They put that on ice after they were acquired by Valve and put to work on helping ship Half-Life Alyx. It really makes me hope that we get that again someday, because the style and the writing and the world building and the environmental storytelling that they have is fucking fantastic. Go play Firewatch. It's on Game Pass. If you want to play it on console and on PC, it's on Game Pass. There you go. But Mike, breaking news, actually, and I'm just going to stop it here real quick. And I don't even know if right now Sony's State of Play is going on, the PlayStation State of Play, their direct or showcase or whatever you want to call. Hot off the presses, Mike. Not that we haven't known about this, but Resident Evil 4 Remake has officially been announced. Evil fucking 4 Remake, which we've kind of talked about before. That, okay, yeah, you know, we expect this is next in line to come from the team over at Capcom who works on the remakes. You know, this is what we fully expect, what's next in the pipeline for Resident Evil after getting RE8. March 24th, it's coming out as of right now. So not that fucking far away, and holy shit, does this game look fucking gorgeous. I mean, chocker. But because it's naturally, it's made on the RE engine, but not the Resident Evil engine, the Reach for the Moon engine. I still think that's the biggest fucking mystery in the world, how for the longest time, because everyone just always thought, oh, RE engine, Resident Evil engine, like, and then them coming out and saying Reach for the Moon engine, I was like, wait, what? That's what RE...
You're like,
when,
man?
Yeah, literally, when, man? Like, what? So, obviously, I haven't seen anything that, in terms of if it has been confirmed for Xbox, I would obviously imagine that it is. Also, too, and this is just because I'm scrolling through my notifications now to kind of pick this up, Spider-Man PS4 is coming to PC, so y'all motherfuckers have no excuse to play that game now. It's on PC. If you have a fucking PC... like, that may be a giveaway that we do. Like, I want to make sure people play this fucking game now that's on PC, because it's gorgeous. And if you loved Sunset Overdrive, you're going to fucking adore this game. But anyways, RE, I would imagine, being Capcom and the way that they are, we're obviously going to see this game on Xbox and obviously PC as well. So that's going to be huge. Obviously, that'll be a big game we're going to be covering when it comes out. But definitely check out the trailer. It looks fucking gorgeous. And yeah, I mean, I'm just so fucking hyped for that now. I figured this would be a low tier event for them, or I should say like showcase for them, because usually state of plays are very much check your expectations kind of thing. You're going to get some cool little announcement, but never anything super big. And that is super big to me. That is a very big thing for me, that we're going to finally get what is, to a lot of people, one of the best survival horror games and really action horror games, that if you love the Evil Within, like, that's because Resident Evil 4, I don't want to even say crawled, because a lot of people say it ran while fucking the Evil Within walked, but the reason that series was loved by so many was because Resident Evil 4 just knocked it out of the fucking park. So definitely keep an eye out for that. Like I said, I don't have a lot of info on it now besides the release date, and hey, it looks fucking gorgeous, just because of the full fact it was just announced like 2 minutes ago. So, anywho, though, Mike, before we get way too off topic, let's get into our big topic for this week. And I kind of teased it a little bit at the beginning of the show, but I think, personally, we jumped the gun a little bit. Okay, we jumped the gun a little bit when the... And naturally, I'm excited. You've been listening to the show, we've been doing the show for fucking 3 years now. Almost, you know, we're over the 150 episode hump here. Like, if you've been listening for a long time, you know that if the hype gets too palpable, I'm right there. Like, I just get excited about video games. I want to talk about them. So when we first got the announcement that, hey, yes, obviously, we already knew this, but officially, here's the date for the Xbox Game Showcase that we're going to have for this summer, or the traditional E3 window. You know, I wanted to say, hey, let's predict it. Let's talk about it. Let's do all this, yada, yada. Of course, we know what's going to be there. Starfield, that's the big fucking game this year. That's the big guy that we're waiting for. and like a week later it got delayed. So I don't necessarily want to do another predictions thing. I want to build on that though. And I want to talk about really kind of this conversation that's been going around really within the gaming community of really the state of Xbox games and Xbox game studios, like their first party output, their partnership output, things like that, where these are Xbox experiences that we're getting. You traditionally think, obviously, from Xbox game studios, Bethesda in-house now, soon to be Activision Blizzard now, but their publishing partners as well that they have, like Asobo, who does Microsoft Flight Simulator. So kind of things like that that I kind of wanted to just touch on, because a lot of, ever since the delay announcement of both Redfall and Starfield until the first half of next year, a lot of people you've been hearing this conversation again of like, well, this was Xbox's chance to kind of kick off that, hey, we're going to have big game after big game after big, we're going to have those exclusives roll out on a consistent basis, and they're not hitting that now. That they're back to Xbox One days of, you're going to get, like, maybe if you're lucky, an exclusive of a year kind of thing. And obviously, I personally, just because I think Mike, and I'm sure you'll agree a little bit, but that we are very much obviously a lot closer to the fire than, you know, maybe some, obviously hosting an Xbox show, being in that news cycle, you know, very, very, very regularly, that we're hearing a lot of stuff, we're paying attention to what goes on in industry chatter, that we know that's obviously not true, but that there is some credence of, well, we did get these announcements, or we did get these announcements of acquisitions and changing, you know, the kind of trajectory of what Xbox wants to do with their video game output, of them wanting to say, no, we're doubling down on games, we're getting all these studios, we're, it's going to take a few years, but we're going to get there, and we're going to be churning out stuff. That I think there's an interesting conversation to kind of have there. And there's some games, there was this really, really great post, and I'm going to make sure I link it, and I want to make sure I give credit to the person who made this. User on Reddit, Crusader3456, over on the r/gamingleaksandrumors, one of my favorite to browse because I just can't help the hype, but made this incredible, incredible, excellent layout of pretty much the state of Xbox Game Studios and Bethesda and Activision, King, Blizzard, like everything that's going on, what we think's going on, where we're at. And I think in the a user also made this, let me make sure I credit them for making this incredible infograph that's linked in there as well. Those will both be linked in the description of the show, like we always do. But Souls Ninja over on Twitter, so make sure you're over there, give them a shout out, but made this incredible infograph that really breaks everything down on the 30 plus studios that Microsoft's working with right now, 50 plus projects that are either confirmed, leaked, or rumored to be kind of, you know, out there and coming, that I think this is a really good kind of barometer to look at and just kind of talk about the state of Xbox game studios and what Xbox, their projects are, and what we can expect. Really, maybe, you know, obviously building upon what we already kind of predicted a couple weeks ago for the Xbox Game Showcase, but what we should expect kind of going forward, the second half of 2022 and beyond, of just what we can expect from Xbox. So, Mike, I kind of want to kick it off and looking at this, let's start on, it's bracketed into a couple of different things. Obviously, let's start off with Xbox Game Studios. One thing that I kind of want to get your thoughts on, that's the coalition. And we obviously have Gears coming down the pipeline. They are the Gears studio, quote unquote. But we've seen them be very vocal and very upfront and very close with Epic Games, talking about and showing, hey, we're using Unreal 5 tech. We're using the Unreal 5 engine. We are very much using Epic's tech to work on our next game and our different games. And it has been confirmed that there is a new IP in the works from them, not just Gears. They have another Gears game coming. There's obviously what seems to be multiple teams at the studio now that they're churning out. I guess my question to you is, as a Gears fan like me, and you having even a lot more experience on the multiplayer end, Do you think that's what the Gears IP can handle right now? Like, a studio who is very much dead center set on this is the studio that makes Gears titles. Do you think that's the right approach, not only for Gears, but also a new IP? Do you think there's enough bandwidth, I guess, from what I'm saying, that both can kind of cohabitate within that one studio?
Yeah, that's definitely a tricky question and a good one. For me, Gears of War, I mean, like I said, the campaigns were always, really good. But I will say, hopefully there's no Gears fans like out there that would get mad at this. But like, for me, like, it was probably best as a trilogy, in mm-hmm. my opinion. I'm not trying to say that Gears 4 or 5 aren't any good or anything. But I felt like the story had run its course in a really good way. I thought that Epic as a studio, before, the Coalition taking over and everything, I thought that they did such a fantastic job with that game. And I thought that they beautifully ended it with Gears of War 3, with the mm-hmm. campaign especially in mind. However, now that the game is continuing on, I think that... I don't know exactly what to expect from them outside of a Gears game, mm-hmm. Because I don't feel like they have a whole lot of experience outside of making those games. And say what you want about Gears 4 and Gears 5. I have a lot more experience with Gears 5 than Gears 4. Mm-hmm. I thought that, all things considered, it was a pretty solid multiplayer experience. Oh. It wasn't like traditional groundbreaking. Like, Gears of War 1 is so... Everyone looks at it with rose-tinted glasses because it was so different. Mm-hmm. It was such a different experience when it comes to shooting multiplayer games that a lot of people have extremely fond memories of it. And it's the way that nostalgia kind of works. Everyone looks back so fondly on games and they have a hard time being critical. And I would definitely lump myself in there. This is a long way to go around saying, like, I still enjoyed the original Gears 1, Gears 2 more than I did the later Gears multiplayer experiences. But a new Gears of War 6 is going to get me to download it day one if it's on Game Pass and play multiplayer. It just always is going to be that type of driving force for me. Mm-hmm. If they did something completely different with the campaign, I might be a little bit more into it. But I kind of grew up not only with Halo, but I grew up with Gears of War going through 1 to 3. Mm-hmm. Once 3 hit and I was, a young adult, I think I was like 18 when Gears 3 happened, mm-hmm. like, that kind of phase of my life as far as being super interested in the Gears campaign were kind of, like, I was growing out of that phase, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, looking at them as a studio, I don't have as much utility for them outside of a multiplayer experience. So I don't feel 100% safe in saying, like, my opinion should be super valued or anything of that nature. But I will say that I would much rather a studio like the Coalition take pride and focus on a singular project and really knock that out of the park than spreading themselves too thin. I'm not saying they can't do that. I'm not saying mm-hmm. they can't multitask and work on multiple things at once. I'm just saying Halo Infinite with 343 and some other studios, like with the new Battlefield, like, those are two games that just weren't that great. Mm-hmm. Halo Infinite, obviously light years ahead of Battlefield 2042. But, like, I hope that those experiences heed as warnings for other studios to make sure that they prevent that from happening going forward, basically.
Yeah, and that's, and I understand that too. I get that because I'm usually right there with you that I'm all about, hey, take the time that it needs to get something right, especially too with how we've seen just the entertainment landscape shift and change so much. Really, in the last 5 years or so, I'd say, but especially since we've gotten to 2020, the pandemic and everything, and we've seen how workflows changed and what it takes to really not only get things out when supplies are limited and constraints are going on. But just, you know, anything from an entertainment property needing to be handled from afar and remotely at times, and especially too within gaming, where a lot of your work is done digitally to begin with, that obviously, you know, having a precedence on working remotely is always there, and obviously is probably played into some cost saving measurements and whatnot to keep everything rolling, that I'm usually there with you. I wouldn't be super, super tore up by any means. Like, I guess I'm kind of like, either way, I'm fine. But I would want them to, like you're saying, I do agree with you that I would want them to focus in and focus in on making something that is their own. Now, whether that is truly making the Gears franchise their own and leaving their mark to finally feel like it, because that's the one thing that I think the Coalition has put out two very good Gears games. Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you, Mike. Gears 1 through 3 has a very soft spot in my gaming history, because that was something that was always played. I loved Gears 1. I still think that's one of the most stylized and unique experiences of that generation, because it was really one of the first true cinematic experiences we got on that generation. Not to mention too Gears 2 and all the time I put into Horde mode and stuff like that. Like, and then just wrapping up with Gears 3. I mean, I really think though that when we get to, and obviously we're not going to talk about fucking Gears Juggernaut or whatever that one was, but when we finally get to, it's almost in the sense of, like we've seen with 343, that sometimes you do look at these things with rose-tinted glasses, but very much, it's hard to, there's times where you're kind of chasing the dragon forever. And I feel like, not that, like, I would want to see, like, I would have wanted to see like 343 completely go off. It's almost like the Star Wars complex that's going on. A lot of people want, where people have been clamoring. There's so much lore that's out there in that universe and in the Star Wars pantheons of extended universe stuff. What's canon, what isn't now, yada, yada, whatever. They have all this lore to pull from that has been made. And they keep going back to Luke Skywalker. Where, not that people don't want to see that story every now and then, but for 9 movies, everything funnels back to Luke, when there's a whole galaxy of these interesting stories that people have clearly bought up and is, like, people want more of, because they keep buying all the books and comics and games, and, like, so many other outlets besides the movies have shown you could have ridiculously great and interesting and compelling stories without him in it. Where that's kind of what I wanted both from 343 and the Coalition to begin with, where it's just felt like 343 has always tried to, they're always chasing that original, they always have that one foot in, one foot out approach of Halo, that it's, we want to try to keep with it, but at the same time, we want to make something our own. Same with the Coalition, where, and I think they've done a better job at keeping the heart of Gears there to a degree.
Yeah.
Than 343. But at the same time, they've made, and same with 343, while it's obviously might not be what the core deep audience wants, these games have been successes long term over, you know, all of the releases in, you know, Infinite 5 and 4, not to mention Gears 4 and 5. Like, these have all been super successful and well-reviewed games that, you know, the mass audiences are okay with them, but they still haven't felt like either of these studios have found their own, like, whether it's taking those IP or making new ones. I want them to find something that they can make their own, because the talent that both of those studios do have is right there. That it just feels like it's hard to explain. I know I probably sound like I'm just like spinning tires here, but it's just hard to really, it's tough to look at these studios with this talent and the amount of detail, especially looking at all of the unique demos that the Coalition's put out with Unreal 5, and how they've talked about using that tech and having that tech and being able to used on not only Gears, but whatever else they're working on. Like, I want to see whatever else they're working on. I'm ready. And I think I'm kind of like talking myself out of like, well, I'm okay with either one. I want to see what they can do with something that they don't have to stick to. Where, like I said, the Star Wars thing where it all has to center back to Luke. It doesn't. You have Gears books, Gears comics, Gears movie. Like, there are things out there. People love this franchise, just like Halo. There's tons of fucking extended. I'll pick up The Fall of Reach on my desk right now. Like, this book right here, just fucking, like, you can, there's so much lore and built worlds out there that, like, you don't need to focus on, it doesn't have to focus back to Marcus Fenix. It doesn't. He already told his story. It's good. Like, we're good. We had an ending, just like Master Chief. You don't need necessarily Master Chief to tell that story. Talk about a pocket of history in there that doesn't have to deal with it. That's why I think so many people, like, unless you pan the camera over on the right-hand side in the last scene of the game, why so many people connected with Reach's story and campaign? Like, because Master Chief really wasn't, like, it focused on this subset. Same with ODST. It's Shocker. Like, people really dug those experiences because it wasn't focused on one specific, like, you could tell more stories. There's more stories out there. And I think that's the big thing with the Coalition that I kind of, like, sink my teeth into. And I know we got really specific on one thing, but, like, I'm excited to see what they're working on next that isn't Gears. I'm going to be excited for Gears 6, don't get me wrong, because I thoroughly enjoyed Gears 5, especially the campaign. I'm excited to see what they can do without having, once they get the chains off. Like, you take the dog off the leash, let them, when they're not restricted to this one thing, what can they do? That's what I'm excited about. One thing that I want to bring up, Mike, kind of moving on, and when I'm looking through all these studios, we got a lot of things that obviously we're waiting to see from Avowed, from Obsidian, what they potentially could be working on now that the Bethesda's there. There's always the rumor of Fallout New Vegas 2, obviously the Outer Worlds 2 being announced last year as well, and obviously big hitters like Ninja Theory with Hellblade 2 and Rare with whatever the hell's going on with Everwild. But one thing I want to bring up, and this is keen to you, Mike, World's Edge. And obviously we recently got, and I still say recently, but we recently got the Age of Empires 4 release not that long ago. There's supposedly been leaked a Series X and S port is on the way. We're getting a console port of that, which is good. What else would you want from them? Because one of the things that's kind of floating out there is the possibility of bringing in Age of Mythology. You as an RTS fan, and, you know, I like to dabble here and there, but very much so you and Adam, but more specifically you in our group, is very much always been the RTS guy. What from World's Edge that isn't Age of Empires would you want? Or would you want them kind of in the same realm to kind of stick to what they were kind of built around, and that being Age of Empires 4, and make that their own? Do you want them to focus on that, or what would you want from them? Would you want them to see go down the route of, hey, here's the Halo IP, make the next Halo Wars? Like, what do you kind of think you want out of that RTS realm from Xbox Game Studios?
Yeah, that's another good question, because there are, you know, a lot of thoughts that come into my mind, and I do really enjoy the work that they've done on Age of Empires. Obviously, that's saying the least. Like, mm-hmm. I've thoroughly enjoyed all their hard work, especially on Age of Empires 2. Age of Empires 4 wasn't necessarily my jam. I bought it, gave it a chance, just not my thing, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be everyone's thing, that's for sure. But for me, I see them as a studio who, you know, they kind of played both sides of the fiddle, where they really went against the grain and went against their traditional, I guess you could say, quote unquote, traditional Age of Empires experience. They tried to do their best to combine Age of Empires 3 and Age of Empires 2, which I do commend them for trying to really go, you know, outside of the realm of, like, what would necessarily be deemed as normal for them, I guess you could say. And I do think that there's a lot of merit in that effort from them. Uh-huh. But I will say, personally, as long as you know, they don't necessarily slip a whole lot on Age of Empires 2 content. And for all intents and purposes, people have played Age of Empires 2 for many, many years, and it's been basically the same game with little to no adaptation or little to no changes. So for them, they really can get away with releasing small amounts of content at a time, and people are going to be, you know, super happy with them. I think they're still seeing a lot of success when it comes to the expansions that they're adding to the game, which is good because they deserve it. You know, they've done really good work with the expansions and with the new civilizations that they're adding into Age of Empires 2. Mm-hmm. And I think that all that goes, you know, it goes to show because they do really good numbers. And every time they release a little bit of new content, the player base jumps up for, especially Age of Empires 2. For them, it feels like they could get away with shying away from strictly Age of Empires 2 or Age of Empires 4 content, and they could maybe dabble into something a little bit different if they really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I say that is, again, the Age of Empires 2 player base is such a hardcore one that they were playing Age of Empires 2 on Voobly mm-hmm. with no new content, you know, for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And for that reason, it definitely feels like if they wanted to go in a little bit of a different direction, it would be relatively, if there's going to be a good time to do that, it probably feels like now would make a lot of sense for them.
Yeah, and I agree. Now, granted, like I said, I don't have the lineage with RTSs outside of obviously Warcraft, Starcraft, stuff like that, playing as a kid, and still now to this day will dabble in, but have never been necessarily the deepest of RPG of a fan out there. But seeing how detailed and thorough World's Edge is with a lot of their intricacies that go along with their releases with Age of Empires, to me, if I want, and I think that's one of the things that I've enjoyed so much as somebody from the outside, not just, you know, somebody watching this kind of entity grow within Xbox, but somebody who also is just a fucking fan of video games and wanting to see every person who works within games and every company within games succeed, because that only rewards us all with having more games to play and experiences out there, and more people gaming at the end of the day. But one of the things I've enjoyed seeing Xbox so much is kind of put that out there of, like, we're all on one team within here. Like, I want you, feel free to intermingle. Feel free to kind of work with each other. And that's why, like, I think right now, 343, kind of in a vulnerable spot a little bit. Do they necessarily, they have what is now seen to be this leaked Halo project that they're working on. Nobody knows really what it is or anything like that, that they're just working on something that is not Halo Infinite or MCC. You know, if that's Halo Wars 3, does Microsoft really want to go down that route with them, where Halo Wars 1, well received, still played to this day by a lot of people, and same with Halo Wars 2, which wasn't necessarily super well received but didn't succeed as much as the original did, and
also got a lot less support, arguably,
right,
too.
And it came from 343, and not saying that, you know, that's also on, hey, we have to allocate funds appropriately where they're needed, whether it's Halo 5, whether it's the, you know, development of MCC, then moving towards Infinite, yada, yada, whatever. But, you know, is that something that, yes, they're not an RTS studio. They're clearly an FPS studio and have success doing that one way or another. That's one of those where I would love to see somebody like World's Edge, who has that experience, who has that wheelhouse, to just fucking step in and say, there's something with this sect of the IP, we'll handle that. Let us run with that, like they did, or the original team behind Age of Empires back in the day, taking on Halo Wars 1 and kind of running with that, like, originally. So
that would be awesome. If there was one game that I want them to make, and again, I could get how people might be a little bit bored of the genre, or not of the genre, I'm sorry, of, like, Halo being wrapped into things. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of other possibilities that they could really go with.
Yeah.
And I would really, I just hope that they, if there is going to be a game that's not Age of Empires that they work on, a new Halo RTS sounds really good to me.
Yeah.
And one that's developed, no offense, one that's developed primarily for PC. Because even though Halo Wars, I love it, it's a very good game, I've had a lot of enjoyment with it, it's definitely limited because of its design for console, and that's okay, that's what they wanted to design it for.
Yeah.
But I would like to see them be able to, you know, really focus on the PC version of a game like that and see what they could come up with.
Yeah, definitely. Jason Schreier's book, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, I read last summer finally. I had it on my shelf for a few years, and I finally got around to reading it when we went to the beach. And the story that he talks about in the development of Halo Wars and just the transition from Age of Empires to doing this Halo project but never having experience working on console games and only specifically focused on PC and what it took to get that game out and get it fucking playable and, most importantly, enjoyable to people. People actually want to fucking play the game. It's really, really fascinating. I highly suggest if anybody out there, you, Mike, whoever, like, if you have the chance, read that book. The whole book's great, but that specific chapter, look it up. It's really, really interesting, or the audio book or something. But moving on, let's kind of go into the publishing end real quick before we kind of head into the other big arms of the machine that obviously is Xbox Game Studios. But let's kind of talk second party publishing. The one big one that's kind of floating out there that I think a lot of people both, it was kind of leaked, but it, you know, there were, I don't want to say rumors, but sources were saying this and yada yada. But the big one being Kojima, Kojima Productions, that, you know, very much adamant of, you know, Hideo Kojima being very much adamant in the sense of wanting to stay third party, not wanting to be acquired by anyone, not wanting necessarily exclusivity for a project on one thing and never again kind of thing. We've obviously seen Death Stranding come to PC. And, you know, I could see eventually one day it potentially coming to Xbox. But that being that there was supposedly this cloud project that is now linked, almost official, where they have a letter of intent that is signed supposedly of, hey, Kojima Productions is going to make a game for Xbox Game Studios, develop a game, and it's based within their cloud technology. Is that something, Mike, that I think, now granted, it's Hideo Kojima. If it's one of those things that if you're an enthusiast of gaming, you know the name, you know Metal Gear, you know the success that has gone into that franchise, and him as a creative in general has a lot of sex appeal to it, not actual sex appeal, but you get what I mean. Like, there, it's
maybe.
Maybe. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
I mean, he's in his fucking 50s, but hey, Kojima's got a fuck. I mean,
you never know.
Yeah, I mean, he's got deep pockets, and I ain't talking about money, you know? So, but anyway, but is that something I guess people want out of something from Hideo Kojima with Xbox Game Studios, with something exclusive to Xbox? Like, I know it's always talked about, oh, you know, Microsoft's infrastructure, and even for me in general, just last week, I think we talked about it. The infrastructure with the cloud support that Microsoft has is incredible. It's very good. And I'm sure that is something that, hey, if he's coming here and maybe he's wanting to do something like that because he always wants to do something off the fucking wall, like, maybe this was a thing that he needed. Like, hey, I want to make something so to say that I made something that was cloud developed or whatever. Mm-hmm. But is that something that necessarily the consumer that you're selling this to, what you're hoping most gamers are going to pick up and be a nice incentive to invest in your on-demand cloud gaming, do you think that's what they want out of it, or what the average consumer or the gamer that you're marketing to would actually want out of a Kojima product? Wouldn't they want a full go to the store, buy the disc, put it in, or is this okay?
It definitely seems like Hideki, you know, I feel like the fans of Kojima are people that would want a full experience, quote unquote, I guess, if that's the term you want to use for it. I don't know if that is the correct term that people would technically say, because there's arguments to be made that, like, well, if it's a full game, like, if it's a game, it's obviously one that is a full experience, quote mm-hmm. unquote. So I guess that would be a little bit more in the eye of the beholder. But for me, I feel like there's also going to be a large pocket of Kojima fans who just kind of want more Kojima, mm-hmm. period. So for me, it feels like a little bit of both. There are definitely going to be those out there that are a little bit resentful that he's going to be only making a cloud game because they want another full experience. Mm-hmm. But there's also going to be a huge amount of people that are happy to get anything from him. Personally, what I see is I see an opportunity for him to kind of really change the narrative on cloud-based games, quote unquote, if you know that's the term you want to use for it. And you know, I think it's really cool, and it's definitely I don't know what word to really I don't know if I would use brave because he's gonna get paid, but like it's definitely putting himself out there because you know, an example that kind of comes to mind is like Michael Jackson being the person who designed all the music for Sonic the Hedgehog 3, but not putting his name in the credits because he was a little embarrassed with the technology and that it couldn't produce the sounds that he was wanting to mm-hmm. produce, you know what I mean? But, you know, someone like Kojima, I know a musician and a game developer, it's not really, it's apples and oranges, but still, I just hope that he's able to get out of the technology whatever he's looking to get out of, because you can tell by his games that he cares mm-hmm. and that he's definitely a bit of a perfectionist. And I hope that, I don't think he would take a project on if he thought it was a lock to be a failure. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why he would be open to doing this, and hopefully for him it all works out and it's worth it, you know what I mean?
No, definitely. And I think it's it, like I said, it's a sexy name to bring in to, if you really want to bolster the cloud component of Xbox Game Pass and really push that, that's an easy one to throw right in there and say, hey, you want to play, it may not, you know, it's not going to be Death Stranding 2 that recently kind of got leaked, but it's, you know, maybe it is whatever fucking his next, maybe it's a side project he's working on. Maybe it is a full-fledged, like, hey, this is, I don't think it will be, but this is the canceled Silent Hills game. I'm, you know, I worked with Konami and Xbox made it possible. We're doing it on this project. Who the fuck knows? It's Kojima, so it's going to be batshit crazy. It's going to be a game that probably a lot of people will toke up before fucking playing to get the full experience, just to understand the plot. Not saying anything, but, you know, not saying that it's necessarily needed all the time, but I wouldn't blame anybody for doing that by any means, because his fucking plots are wacky, good, but wacky. So it's going to be, I'm really curious to see kind of what comes out and what that project actually is, if it's full length, if it's something that is more of a bite-sized experience, a 3 to 5 hour game or something like that, who knows. But anyway, Mike, let's move on. Let's kind of look at now this new, these other two heads of what is now really a three-headed monster. And real quick, let's kind of touch on Bethesda. Obviously, Starfield next in line, coming from at least BGS, that they're going to have, you know, hopefully in the first half of next year, like they're saying, and then obviously Elder Scrolls 6 after that. That's not really anything that we need to, we talk circles around that, it seems like, every week. So we already have the story on that. We know that's where they're at. But one that I kind of want to touch on real quick, in a studio that both you and I have a lot of history with, and me more so, I would say, in the on the more recent term of that, but id Software, and really looking at what's kind of next for them. Doom Eternal came out in 2020, and obviously the acquisition of Bethesda took place later that year, and now they are full-fledged, owned by Microsoft, in, you know, fully up and running. But I think a lot of people do think right off the bat with id Software, obviously Doom, because of how much success that's recently had and whatnot, over the past generation or so of consoles. But one of the things that a lot of people rumored about is Quake, and that being, you know, obviously id's other big property that they kind of have in their Rolodex of what they've worked on in their previous lineage. But it kind of makes me think, though, with, because we both have played Quake Champions, to what extent, you know, it's, we both haven't necessarily dumped a ton of time into it, to say the least. But we both have experience playing the game, kind of dipping our toe in, checking it out, whatnot. And we both have experience at least dabbling in the original Quakes and whatnot. Do we need a new Quake in 2022? And what the hell could that even look like? We have Doom. We have that fast-paced multiplayer. Well, we didn't really. Well, we had multiplayer with Doom Eternal this last time around. But we have this fast-paced FPS experience that focuses more on moving and shooting than reloading and being calculated from, you know, more of a tactical approach. This is just a fast-paced, fucking punchy-in-the-mouth kind of FPS experience with Doom, and it's done to a science that's so well that it ain't damn near off from perfect. Like, it's pretty damn good. So, like, do we, what do we get out of a Quake experience in 2022 and beyond, like, that Doom already isn't getting? And is that still a viable brand, seeing how Quake Champions has kind of really not made a lot of noise?
Yeah, I think I'm going to kind of draw this back to some other games to really make my point with this.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Quake Champions didn't get enough love, and there's a lot of reasons why it didn't get enough love. I think one of the things that is becoming more and more obvious as time wears on is that the days of like the arena shooter reigning supreme over gaming is way behind us.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people said that Counter-Strike, whatever you want to say about Counter-Strike, it has endured the test of time. Mm-hmm. For better or worse, for some people might not like it. I know I myself love it.
Same.
And I like to watch it. I like to watch the esports of it. I like enjoy it. But like, if Halo Infinite has taught us anything, and again, not trying to be, you know, it's always beat up on 343 day in my life, but they do it for me. And even Call of Duty to a certain extent, without Warzone, without fresh content, and the game being brand new, the games viewership wise do very poorly that are arena based shooters. They just do. And a lot of people will say, oh, it doesn't matter what they're doing on like Twitch, as long as, you know, the players are playing it. And I would say that, like, that's somewhat true, but there's also a huge part of it that says, like, well, if people aren't watching it, are people actually really playing it? And I feel like the two are a lot more related than people may want to give it credit for. If people aren't necessarily watching it, are they really playing it? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were saying the Halo shills were like, yeah, who cares about the Steam player base? It's big on Xbox. And then a new Zoo report comes out that says that it's the 12th most played Xbox game. So obviously you'd like it to be higher than
right,
that.
Right, yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of reasons for the shortcomings of arena shooters. I just think that that time has kind of come and passed. I think that there's still going to be a super hardcore sect that plays it competitively. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's going to be a pretty big group that watches it. But to just sit there and grind it endlessly, it's... The arena shooter has had a really hard time at incentivizing players to play. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they can't figure it out. People will play League of Legends for thousands and thousands of hours, never get out of silver, but still play ranked constantly and still suck at the game because their skins are... I don't know what people are really getting out of playing League of Legends, but like... A game like a MOBA like that still does really well player base wise, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the incentive for the players to keep coming back? I think that's the biggest problem with like arena shooters right now that they have to figure out is how do we keep players coming back to our game? And you know, for that, reason. I just don't know that there's, and I hate to say it because I do like Quake, I just don't see there being a world where Quake, there's a need for it.
Mm-hmm.
I could see, like, probably more Wolfenstein content would be really good. But as far as Quake is concerned, I just don't... Who's going to actually sit there and pick up Quake that's super movement-based, super difficult to aim your gun and shoot at people? Like, who's going to actually, like, casually pick that up?
Yeah.
More than just a little bit.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem. Like, esports-wise, I could get that, you know, there still is a little bit of an esports scene for Quake. It's hanging on by a thread. Mm-hmm. But, like, casual players aren't just going to pick that up and play it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, realistically, we've seen, and this may be a little bit of a, like, jaded out there take, I guess, but I feel like we've seen more support and more talk of Quake in the mainstream narrative of the recent re-release of the original Quake on PC, on Steam. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen more support for that, like, verbally and stuff like that, than anything I hear about Quake Champions. So, you know, who knows? Who the fuck knows where they're going to go? I mean, and that's the one nice thing about, I guess, probably this deal from Bethesda's mind with Xbox, where, you know, ZeniMax doesn't have to make that decision anymore, where Microsoft has that fucking big-ass bandwidth that they have financially that they can then say, if you don't want to necessarily, sure, we would love for you to make another Doom game, and we hope you do, we expect you to eventually, but if you want to work on a Quake, if Quake's the next thing that studio wants to work on, financially they can afford to do that if they want to. Mm-hmm. They'll probably still have fucking success, because as of right now, id has found the fucking magic in their development, not only from just how the games feel and play and look, but from an optimization standpoint. I don't know how the fuck id Tech truly works in terms of, like, what voodoo they do to get that shit to work. Mm. But that shit is flexible. It is fucking powerful. That shit runs well on everything, man. Like, it really, it's incredible to see how well their games have kind of formed and moved across the past generation or so.
And if it's even possible for them to be under the radar, low-key, like, one of the best under the radar developers.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Not you,
yeah,
quote-unquote, like their games, the polish and the you know, the joy and the honor they take in making
mm-hmm.
games is less, like, so evident.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, they're one of my favorite studios now. And when I was younger, like, yeah, I played Doom and stuff like that, you know, the shareware version and shit like that on my computer back in the day. But, like, I was never, like, balls deep into Doom. Like, I played, like, Diablo and Blizzard games and shit like that on my PC. And then when I got a little bit older, like, whenever I was in, what would that have been, like, second or third grade, something like that, whenever Morrowind came out, that's when I started getting into, like, PC RPGs and that end of, like, oh, shit, okay. But I never got into that, like, hardcore, like, Quake Doom shooter, arena shooter that we've seen from them. That now, though, like, that's anything id puts out, I'm 100% in, because even just replaying for the however manyth time, Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal now, like, the sauce that they have is, they got it. Like, chef's kiss. Mm-hmm. They just fucking have it figured out, like, from so many different angles. Anywho, though, just so we're kind of staying on track, because we still got a little bit to cover, but you brought up Machine Games with Wolfenstein. Obviously, we're still waiting for a rumored Wolfenstein 3 to be officially announced. They have another project in the works on top of the Indiana Jones game that they announced a little while back that is in development. I wouldn't be shocked if we potentially see a CG trailer for Indiana Jones, because I think it's going to end up being... if I had to bet on anything, even though Machine Games is well known for their FPS elements and doing and being an FPS developer now with the Wolfenstein projects and them being so successful once again. But if I had to bet any money, Indiana Jones is going to end up being an Uncharted style third person action venture game over the shoulder, yada, yada, But the one thing that I will say about Machine Games, they know how to do set pieces so well. And that's one of the great things about Uncharted that Naughty Dog does so well. It's the set pieces with that franchise that really makes them over the top cinematic. And I think if anybody can, you know, kind of at least give them a run for their money, it's what Machine Games has been able to do with the set pieces in Wolfenstein. So anywho, kind of moving on, let's go into Activision and Blizzard, Mike, as we kind of round out this a little bit. We kind of talked about it a little bit before. So before we kind of jump into Blizzard and everything that's going on with Diablo and whatnot, let's kind of talk Call of Duty real quick. We know that obviously Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is going to be coming out. And then we're getting one more in 2023-4. So this one's, Modern Warfare 2 is the 22-23 game. And then we're going to have one from Sledgehammer Games in 23-24, like that annual release. Then it sounds like we're getting a break from Call of Duty. That is the right thing, correct? Like, I feel very safe saying yes. This is welcome that, you know, this break is a very good thing. This is what's needed for Call of Duty. Though I will say Modern Warfare 2, from what little we've seen, we got the announcement today actually saying, hey, we're getting the world premiere June 8th, I believe it is. So next week as we kick off Summer Games Fest, and we'll obviously have a lot of coverage on that next week as we head into the Xbox Game Showcase 2 the weekend after. So, but that looks great. I'm excited about that, actually. I still have yet to play 2019's Modern Warfare's campaign, which I really want to do. I just fucking hate buying stuff on Battle.net anymore. That's the one thing that because I fully believe this. I fully believe this, and it will still be... Battle.net will never go away. The Blizzard app will never go away. It really won't. But I bet acquisition is finished with Activision Blizzard under Microsoft, I bet we see those games on Steam. I think we will live in a world that maybe not World of Warcraft, maybe not, you know, Overwatch 2, but I wouldn't be shocked, at least with Activision, if we see the Call of Duties on there, if we see the, you know, a lot of those bigger titles that Activision traditionally, that are the live service titles that we traditionally see only on the Battle.net app, that we see those on Steam again too. I mean, I wouldn't even be shocked at that point if we see Diablo 4, and hell, we could even see Hearthstone, Warcraft, anything like that. But with how proactive Microsoft is with getting stuff and working, instead of, you know, funneling you directly only through the Microsoft store, they're saying, no, go to Steam. We don't fucking care where you play our games. I could see them doing that. And I know for one, that would make me so fucking happy because I like just having everything on Steam. It's super fucking easy.
And we're super used to it.
Right. Yeah. I got fucking 300 some games on Steam. Like I like having it all just in fucking one piece there. But anywho, though, the one thing, though, that I'm very interested with Activision is, and Call of Duty, is that, do you think with Microsoft's kind of acquisition of them and what the future is going to be, it sounds like, obviously, like we said, Call of Duty getting a break, at least from mainline entry. Do you think we eventually go to Call of Duty as a platform? Like we've seen, granted, we see that with Warzone already, where, hey, Warzone is just its standalone experience. It's free to play. You go right in, you know, boom, it's right there. It has, yeah, you could train, you know, your progress with certain things will carry over in different ways, but you don't have to own any Call of Duty for this. This is its very own platform. Like, do we see Call of Duty truly going to that? We've saw it a little bit with Black Ops and even in the Vanguard, where you're pretty much opening one launcher in a way. But at the same time, like, are we going to just see Call of Duty and then we're buying, you know, $30 or $40, whatever it is. I mean, hell, even the $60, you know, yearly annual subscription or whatever for Call of Duty that gets you all the new content every year, compared to these individual releases, like, Do you think that is the most ideal future for Call of Duty and really like any of these annualized releases?
For me, I think so. I see Call of Duty as a game that obviously people still enjoy it because people are still buying it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's just, there's a lot of other things that could be done that they're not turning over so fast and hitting people for $60 every year. And I think people are really starting to get sick of it. Good, because it's going to invoke change. For me, I know I've gone years saying like, oh, I'm not buying the new Call of Duty, and then I buy it,
right.
And then I'm saying, oh, you know, it's always that game that just like is annoying to buy because I know I'll play it for like a couple of weeks and then I'll just never touch it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think going to more of a platform experience will be much better for pretty much basically maybe everyone involved, mm-hmm. quite frankly. Because, you know, the like season pass model has proven to do pretty well, in my opinion. Like I think games that go with that model do very well for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And using that as a way to, you know, get your game out there,
mm-hmm.
And make sure people are getting involved with it, just makes a whole lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would look to do if I were them, and actually be a game of service and not say you're a game of service and then never come out with updates. I think going to a game of service would work really well, and it would give them some time to really develop a new engine with new features, and it would save them, I think, a lot of headaches down the road for them.
No, definitely. And I'm right there with you. I would like to see that eventually go to what most modern live service titles are. And that's where you see the most success from. I mean, you don't typically, I think most people, and that's why I think most people are getting, granted, sales are still up because that's the only outlets they have, but that's why you see so many people are getting sick of annualized sports titles. Like,
mm-hmm.
they would love to just, I played NHL 22, the first NHL game I've probably went out of my way, installed, and played for the first time since 2017, I'd want to say. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, this is great. And, you know, luckily, because it's on Game Pass with EA Play, like, yeah, I would be all for that. I would gladly pay the subscription to, if that's on there, that I get that day one, even though it doesn't come day one. But, like, if those things did, like, that to me is an easy investment for me. Because I'd love to just, every now and then I get that itch to, like, I just want to play a game of Chell. Like, I just want to get on there, you know, dick down somebody real quick and call it a day. Like, you know, we don't really have those experiences. Like, there's not as many experiences like that across the board anymore that are worth $60 to go out and pay every year just to have. Like, you know, to me, that's the easiest way to do it is just go these subscription routes, these live service and these annualized releases that you're still going to get the money back. And you're probably going to get even more money doing it that way because more people are willing to invest more money long term if you're updating it and providing. I mean, look at Fortnite, look at Destiny, look at all of these titles that come out that people just dump cash into left and right because they're either free to play or you're getting these yearly updates to keep up with it, you know, that are somewhere between $30 to $60 a year that, okay, well, if I already have the base game, I could back out anytime I really want, but, you know, I still want to get the new content because I've gotten all this time out of a free game. Like, that's just, it just makes no sense to go the opposite way. But anywho, Mike, let's kind of round out with Blizzard. And I think this is kind of the biggest question mark out of all of this, with obviously everything that we've seen gone down with Blizzard, that we've seen, you know, the horrible things come out of Blizzard in terms of, you know, the sexual misconduct issues that pop out and crunch and everything like that. And obviously on the Activision end with Bobby Kotick being an asshole, that, you know, it's,
and riding the mechanical dodo bowl.
Yes, very much so. He's, yeah, just shitty people doing shitty things. But Blizzard needs a win. And we've obviously seen it. We talked about at the top of the show how, you know, great of a job originally who was Vicarious Visions did with Diablo 2 Resurrected. But I guess what I'm curious about is, what is that win going to be for Blizzard? What is that going to be? Because right now in the pipeline, we're looking at Diablo 4, obviously, coming out. Overwatch 2, obviously, just had a beta of that and whatnot. Diablo Immortal, which we talked about, whatever that experience is truly going to be at the end of the day, whether it's, you know, it's obviously the mobile, it's their mobile output of that, but it's also on PC, so who knows. But after that, we obviously know that it's been confirmed they're working on some kind of new survival game that's a new IP. And then it was leaked that they have another project, you know, AAA main tentpole project in the works, whatever that may be. Are any of these experiences, do you think, going to be the win that Blizzard needs to kind of work towards turning that narrative around a little bit, bringing some goodwill back into their company by what they've always done best with over, you know, their lineage is known for, of making really well-polished games? You know, are any of these going to be that win they need?
These,
loaded question, I know.
It doesn't really feel like it, does it? I would love to see Blizzard kind of, like, make an about face from what's been going on. You know, I think that they're in such a bad spot. And again, they're definitely not at, like, the rock bottom, right? So I don't mean to, like, I don't want to say that per se, but it does really feel like they're about as low as you can possibly get for a studio that, you know, was so beloved for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, whether or not those experiences will be wins is tough to say. I think what will be the better measuring stick for Blizzard is how they treat their current IPs going forward, mm-hmm. and how they treat their employees and everything else going forward. I don't think a new game will really turn the tide for them.
Mm-hmm.
If they make a really, like, smashing new game, people will be like, okay, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do it in the right manner. But I think the only way to start winning back people's opinion of you,
mm-hmm.
is to really do those IPs that have been out for a while a great justice, in my opinion. Knocking Overwatch 2 out of the park, which I know it's just going to be Overwatch 1 just reskinned with some different things.
Yeah,
like,
and to be honest, if it's Overwatch with, and when I say a new coat of paint, I mean you going in, and new coat of paint means actually getting under the hood and updating some of the issues that the community has been wanting for a while, and realistically, mm-hmm. providing more fucking support to the everyday gamer, not just the pro scene, of, hey, actually providing content for us to get in there. I mean, modern amenities of a, you know, of a live service game like a Battle Pass, or something that we can work towards keeping us invested in it outside of just getting some skins from the Overwatch League. Like, those are the things that I want personally. But not to interrupt you, but yes, like, actually giving a damn, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the way that you start to win people back. And whether they do that or not, it'll be interesting to see. But truly, I don't think it really matters what they do with games coming out. I think it matters with, you know, how they treat their customers going forward. And it's a good start to be getting acquired by Microsoft, because, you know, they have a pretty significant track record recently of wanting to be that beacon of hope for customers.
No, definitely. And I'm right there with you. I want to see from these titles that are established IP that there is still that magic with them. And obviously we've seen that with the attention to detail that was put to D2 Resurrected. You know, I want to see that with Diablo 4. I want to see that with Overwatch 2. I want to see that with whatever comes next from Warcraft. If that's a new RTS, or, which I doubt, but or if that's some kind of iteration of World of Warcraft, you know, being whatever the next thing is from that. Like, whatever the next, whatever these established IP are, I want them to knock it out of the park. I want them to, I want to have faith in Blizzard again that I had faith in from the time I was like fucking 5 years old or whatever, and I first learned about Warcraft or what in Diablo and like playing the shareware versions of those back in the day, like things like that, that like after that I just knew I had to get Warcraft 3 when it came out. I knew I had to get, you know, Starcraft 2 when it came out. I knew I had to get these games, like trying to run day one buying Diablo 3, like I needed these games. But since then it's been kind of that shaky ground, and I've personally enjoyed Overwatch a ton. I've have hundreds of hours into it, but you know, at the same time, I know I'm not getting the quality that I did at one point. And I don't think that's rose-tinted glasses by any means. Sure, a little bit. But at the same time, like, I think there's enough justifiable views out there and what we've seen stacked up compared to Blizzard of 10 years ago to now that it's, you know, pretty stark. So it's, I'm still positive in this. I'm still being optimistic in this acquisition by Microsoft. I think that's a huge win for both sides, that Blizzard to step away from all the bullshit that's gone along and distance themselves. And hopefully once this fully, this acquisition fully happens, getting Bobby Kotick the fuck out, and really kind of starting fresh a little bit with new leadership and whatnot. But also to, you know, Microsoft having this arsenal of some of the biggest IPs in gaming history, let alone currently. So I'm still very excited for them. But Mike, I think that's going to do it. I think we ran through pretty much all the ones I wanted to at least brought up. But everything that's kind of going on and what we think of Microsoft right now and the studios and kind of just the state of Xbox Game Studios. So I think that's going to do it for episode this week. Why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet to talk about all we talked about, Bethesda, Xbox Game Studios, Kojima, sexy Kojima, I guess that came up, Activision, Blizzard, everything under the sun gaming-wise that we talked about. Where can people find you on the internet to do so?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at TOYSXLDIER. That's Toy Soldier, and the second O is an X. Or you can find me on Twitch at MP_ToySoldier.
Nice, nice. And as always, I'm your host, Travis White, a.k.a. Travless, on most internet platforms, including at Travless_ on Twitter. That's TRAVLESS_. You'd also find me streaming time to time on Twitch.tv/Travless_, same as Twitter. And if you want to play some video games with me, you can do so pretty much on any platform, or just regular old Travless. But specifically on Xbox Live, you can do so at regular old Travless. That's TRAVLESS, no underscore. And this, ladies and gentlemen, has been your newest episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to subscribe to us, rate us, review us, all that jazz wherever you get a podcast at. And follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast. Stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games, like, and our dope giveaways. And that, ladies and gentlemen, has been That's the Show this week. Mike, thank you so much for everyone for listening, sharing, and being a part of our great community. Game on, wash your hands, listen to the doctors, Black Lives Matter, and we will see you next week.